Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ update. A reminder that I will be attending the Ohio Linux Fest, which starts tomorrow and is in Columbus, Ohio. LQ is a proud media sponsor of the event. If you'll be in Columbus either tomorrow or Saturday and would like to connect, please let me know. On that note, I'm proud to announce that LinuxQuestions.org is also a media sponsor of the Ontario Linux Fest, which will be held in Toronto. Here's a note from the Ontario Linux Fest.
This is Meg from Ontario Linux Fest. We look forward to meeting you on Saturday, October 13th in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, for a day-long event that celebrates open source, software libre, and GNU Linux. We have top-notch presentations from key project contributors to inform and delight you. You'll meet other Linux enthusiasts just like you, and perhaps meet the key colleague you need to add to your project. You might even meet your next employer or employee by networking at Ontario Linux Fest. You'll meet our major sponsors from IBM, Novell, and Research in Motion on our exhibition floor and rub elbows with them at our reception after the event. We can't make Ontario Linux Fest happen without our sponsors, and we can't make it succeed without you. Register now at onlinux.ca or call 1-877-TUXFEST. That's 1-877-TUXFEST. We can't wait to meet you at Ontario Linux Fest.
Now, on to the news. The first story I have is SCO files for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. As you've probably heard by now, SCO has filed for Chapter 11. It gets worse, though, as it seems almost half of its finance department has either quit or been fired. Now, two of the people who quit have had over 10 years of experience. I've been through a couple Chapter 11s, and they're never fun. That being said, though, when the financial people start to flee, something is almost definitely severely wrong. It's looking more and more likely to me that we will end up with some kind of shareholder lawsuit before this is all said and done with. Oddly, it seems SCO is blaming competition from Linux for some of its financial shortfall. If they would have tried to compete in the first place, they probably wouldn't be in the position that they're in now. Now, to be sure, some companies are unduly vilified. SCOEX, however, is not one of them. So the question now really becomes, who will end up with the smoldering remains of SCO? One hopes that it will be either IBM or Novell, so we can put this whole thing behind us. There's always that small chance that some patent troll or someone else will try to pick up the remains for kind of pennies on the dollar and move forward with it. Even though it looks clear to most people that the case is absolutely unwinnable, that slight sliver of a chance at the right price would be worth it to some. So let's hope they either completely go under, or IBM or Novell or someone with the sense to do the right thing ends up with the carcass. The next story I have is Yahoo acquires Zimbra for $350 million in cash. Those of you who regularly read my blog or listen to this podcast know that I'm a huge fan of Zimbra. I was quite interested to hear then that they were recently acquired by Yahoo for $350 million, and you heard that right, it was in cash. As many open source acquisitions as of late, that ends up being a fairly stunning multiplier. And obviously the fact that it's an all-cash deal makes it even more so. This is a slightly different move, I think, than the Semmelrun Yahoo would have made. They wanted to be more of a pure media play back then. With this move, they're going more towards the enterprise market, which is where Zimbra predominantly focused, which is a place where Google has been headed recently as well. This move should also serve to catapult Yahoo into direct competition with Microsoft, which has traditionally been a pretty close ally of Yahoo. Zimbra really has the potential to me to be a legitimate exchange killer, and that would obviously certainly draw the ear of Redmond. For medium-sized installations, Zimbra is ready for prime time already and has been for quite some time. I've personally worked on a Zimbra implementation that was adding about 25 to 35,000 accounts a week, and at that size, there were still some growing pains, but with the direction that Zimbra was already taken, and then add to that the experience that Yahoo has at scaling things to just phenomenal levels, and also the additional resources that Yahoo can provide, and I'd expect Zimbra to be ready for the largest of installations very, very soon. Now, to me, note that the rumors of a Microsoft-Yahoo merger that have been going on and off for years now would be a huge blow to Zimbra, in my opinion. It's going to be something to watch out for. And not only would it be a huge blow to Zimbra, I think it would be a pretty big blow to open source to lose Zimbra. Speaking of open source multipliers, Matt Acey recently posted the following about open source multipliers and recent open source acquisitions. This is from his blog at CNET. Quote, let's tally up the list. Zimbra, $350 million on about $10 million in trailing revenues. ZenSource, $500 million on $1 million of trailing revenues. JBoss, $350 million on $27 million worth of revenue in 2006. Sleepy Cat, somewhere in between $35 and $50 million on $7 million in trailing revenues in 2006. Glue Code, $10 million on very little trailing revenues, less than $1 million, May 2005. SUSE, $210 million, November 2003. And Zimian, about $50 million on $1 million or so in trailing revenues. End quote. So that gives you a good idea of some of the larger recent open source acquisitions, and it does make you wonder who the next open source acquisitions will be. The larger open source acquisitions and the ones that are being acquired by non-open source companies is really starting to pick up and is a trend that I would expect to continue. The next story I have is Are You Right with Reality? Michael Thiemann recently asked why it is that the global IT consumer continues to accept IT-related write-downs of $386 billion a year. They do so in a pattern that sees them repeating the mistakes they have made in the past, which is buying the same or upgraded applications and operating systems from the same proprietary sources. The post is a compelling one, and I agree that open source will deliver radically different, radically better results than have been observed in the proprietary software world. What I really liked about the post, however, is the paragraph explaining the difference between free software and open source. It's a question asked often and one that Michael really nails, and as you would expect, I think. And this is from his blog. Quote, one of the questions we received during the interview was the question, what's the difference between the Free Software Foundation and the Open Source Initiative? I chose to answer the question based on the constituencies of free software and open source. In my view, the fundamental difference between the free software movement and the open source movement is that free software is based on the ethics of software freedom, and open source is based on the pragmatic implementation of observed results. I'm a believer in fundamental human rights, including the right to live a healthy life free from oppression. But I am also heavily influenced by what science teaches, and when science teaches that we need to respect the environment or we need to pay attention to what we eat in order to live a healthy life, I tend to lean in that direction of protecting oceans and forests for the health of all, rather than strip mining and clear-cutting them for profit today. When I first read the GNU Manifesto, I was compelled by the moral and ethical arguments that Stallman presented. But what made me willing to do something different, rather than merely take the side of the argument at cocktail parties, was that I saw the commercial benefits of such a model as well. These benefits have now been validated by academic and commercial case studies alike, many of which are referenced in the paper. Is it unethical to adopt an ethical position based on pragmatic reasons? I don't think so. Is it pragmatic to adopt an ethical position without pragmatic evidence? I don't think so. Thus, I identify with open source because it takes the position of pragmatic validation, even if it validates a position based on ethics. I should also note that I know many capitalists who believe that it's unethical to ignore what the free market teaches. I consider that a fairly extreme position, but I include it because it shows that some capitalists are, at their core, deeply ethical people. End quote. I couldn't agree more, and for what it's worth, I usually personally find myself on the open source side of the fence, and I tend to be pragmatic in general, so that probably doesn't come as much of a surprise to those that know me. The next story that I have is the first United States GPL lawsuit has been filed. And the following is from a recent article at Linux Watch. Quote, for the first time in the U.S., a company and software vendor, Monsoon Multimedia, is being taken to court for a GPL violation. Previously, alleged GPL violations have all been settled by letters from the FSF or other open source organizations pointing out the violation. The SFLC, which is the Software Freedom Law Center, announced on September 20th that it had just filed the first ever U.S. copyright infringement lawsuit based on a violation of the GNU GPL on behalf of its client. The group's clients are the two principal developers of BusyBox. BusyBox is a small footprint application that implements a lightweight set of standard Unix utilities. It is commonly used in embedded systems and is open source software licensed under the GPL version 2. The developers of the BusyBox came to the SFLC after trying to talk to Monsoon into honoring the conditions of the GPL. Unsuccessful with this, the SFLC has filed suit on the developers' behalf against Monsoon. End quote. As you probably guessed, this news has just been swirling around the blogosphere like crazy. While it's the first lawsuit to be filed, it looks unlikely that it will go to trial. It's interesting to note that the complaint asks not just for an injunction, which has historically been the presumed remedy for GPL infringement, but also for financial damages. This could make the settlement a little bit trickier. And the first indications, people thought that this was going to be settled immediately, but from the looks of it, Monsoon has absolutely every intention of complying. That doesn't seem to be enough for the BusyBox developers. They do still want something beyond that. And I have to agree with the statement that I saw, which was basically that now that it's gone this far, if we just made them comply and that became the remedy, every company would be incented almost to violate the GPL, because until they got caught, they'd be fine. And then even when they got caught, they would just have to go into compliance with no real penalty. So I think they're just doing this to set the precedent. The one thing I say, I did find the initial attitude of the company a little bit odd. This was from a forum post directly from the company's website, and it was directly from a company rep. And it was, quote, "I'll have to contact the engineering team and see what the expected scope or level of effort is, and then balance it against our other development tasks. And when I know, I will let you know," end quote. And that's odd to me, because you cannot balance legal obligations with development tasks. But looking at the entire thread and the attitude later, and then the attitude of the company after that thread, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that I think he might have just still been learning the GPL and the repercussions of breaking the GPL. He's not a lawyer, so that's my guess on that one. It looks like the company in the end is going to do the right thing, though, and hopefully this comes to a quick end and one that kind of sets a good standard for to avoid companies breaking the GPL in the future. On kind of a side note, which is actually about the product in question, not the GPL case, it's kind of like a Slingbox in a way, if you're familiar with that. I find it odd, or maybe better put, disheartening but not surprising, at how many devices take advantage of Linux specifically, but open source in general, without actually supporting Linux or open source from a product perspective. The Havo, which is Monsoon's product, really looks quite nice, and I would actually buy one, but not nice enough for me to get a Microsoft Media Center or Windows Mobile 5 device, which is what it requires. It doesn't support Linux on the client side in any way, and that's a shame, really. The last story I have is freedom more important than price or cost. And I stumbled upon this article, which was in Enterprise Open Source Magazine via Michael Tiemann's blog, and it's great to see that companies are finally starting to get the true benefits of open source. And here's a quote from the original article. Quote, "Freedom, not cost, is key. Overall, Forrester's research clearly showed that enterprise open source adoption is steadily increasing, with many businesses showing no marked difference in their purchasing attitudes between open source and commercial platforms. But while the increasing popularity of open source software was encouraging from a systems integration standpoint, the more surprising result was why that popularity was increasing. We initially assumed the obvious answer was cost, but in actuality, that's not the case. True, licenses for open source software can be had for a fraction of their commercial counterparts, or nothing at all, but the TCO, or total cost of ownership, for those licenses is far from free. Support costs and staff expertise are still pricier than commercial packages, mainly because they're harder to find. No, what's really driving the adoption of open source software is freedom. Almost half of all respondents interviewed in the Forrester study cited open standards, a lack of usage restrictions, and not being locked into a single software vendor as their primary reasons for looking at or adopting open source solutions. Lower initial purchase cost was cited as important by most interviewees, but just as important is the ability to customize these packages to specific business uses, especially in vertical markets. And although most noted that they won't really change the code, having the option is very valuable to them. Freedom is key. End quote. You see, it's not just about being gratis or even low cost. Sure, that's still, I think, to this day, often what gets kind of an open source foot in the door. In reality, though, that's just not enough, especially for larger enterprises. The open source paradigm is producing very high quality code, and open source companies, and increasingly traditionally closed source companies, are providing real value to clients with that code. And I think that escaping the kind of isn't all open source free as in beer misnomer is a big, big step for us. I'm actually surprised that it's taken this long, but I'm glad that the moment finally seems to be arriving. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.